Hello and welcome to The Awakening for Virgo. Coming to you here on Christmas morning. What I love about holidays like this is that the world is quiet. Just a note, I am experiencing a little bit of respiratory distress, so I can't exactly raise my voice and will be not the usual resonant sound that you're used to, but I am feeling coherent and I'm happy to be here to do this reading for you. I want to begin with a thought experiment. Imagine if you woke up one day and all of your commitments had vanished. Everything you had to do, everything you promised to do, everything you were obligated to do because you'd made a promise or were contractually obligated, family commitments, employment commitments, everything. You did not owe anyone anything at all. How would you feel? Which of the things that you were doing the day before would you continue doing on the day that you woke up in that state, knowing that you owed no one nothing at all? I suspect that most people would be pretty happy that the way life goes, we get ourselves into things that there's not very much getting out of. Then we wonder how we even got there. And we live basically based on these commitments, obligations, contracts, and promises, rather than living in a more creative way, you know, from day to day, based on some form of preference, some form of, preference is the thing, right? Desire, you know, your own personal creative or growth need for that day or that time in your life. From this thought experiment, and I encourage you to think this through, it is pretty clear that our situation on Earth largely involves commitments to other people, not commitments to ourselves. Somehow being invested in their lives or responsible for them in some way, whether we're talking partners or parents or children or even animals, and not commitments to ourselves. And what I'm here to talk about today, more than anything, is tuning in to your commitment to yourself, to your, I guess if you could call it that. There may be a better way to describe it, but I think you know what I mean. What I mean is not involving other people. And I'm not suggesting that you diss everybody and drop everything and do your own thing. And the way life is in this dimension, karma follows us. So there's no doing that. But there is tuning into what I will, I think, confidently call your commitment to yourself, your promises that you made, your maybe what some call original instructions upon having entered this plane of reality, lifetime plan, which I'm not totally convinced that exists, but I leave the possibility open. I think that there's two things about the nature of the Virgo concept, but some say archetype. I'm not sure that's the right word, but this idea of Virgo that's a lot more than about the descriptions of you know what that is, some of which are hilariously accurate. One of them is, I think that the central struggle has something to do with the inner child. Now, there was a time when it was real trendy to talk about inner child work. You remember that? When was that? Maybe it was like the 1990s or something, and everyone was talking about it was the big new age trend of that era, and it was going to solve all of our problems. And I think there are people for whom this is very important, and I also think that I'm in line with the thinking of Robert Bly that we live in the sibling society, essentially a society largely lacking in adult influences. And so this happens for a lot of reasons, one of which is we're generally not really encouraged to mature. Most of the entities that profit from us profit from our not being mature, free-thinking individuals making our own decisions and taking accountability for the choices that we make. But Virgo has a special, the whole setup has a special question. For example, Leo's in the 12th place. The sign before yours is Leo. Leo is very much connected with matters of childhood and the inner child and generally having fun. The Leo has a certain kind of responsibility to it. It's still Leo. It wants to be the center of attention, and it wants to radiate and shine out, and I think describes inner child stuff. And it's in your 12th place, which is a kind of a blind spot. It's a hidden location in the chart. It's a little like the relationship between a dream that you dreamed and how you feel about that dream when you just woke up. It was quite real when you were there, and then when you wake up, you barely remember it. So everything in the 12th is going to have a little bit of that feeling, where it's just on the other side of the veil. It's just in the next room, psychically. And if someone doesn't know that room even exists, for example, it's not easy to get there. And if you wander in by accident, you might not know where you are. Then there is the fifth house. And for Virgo, the fifth house or place, I prefer place, is Capricorn. So the fifth place really expresses the child stuff even better than Leo, which has an association. One's the fifth sign, one's the fifth place. But the fifth place is it's where we seek pleasure, recreation, fun, and where we allow ourselves to take risks. And these are the kind of risks that kids used to take, and they almost always survived. And then we think back and wonder how that was possible, everything just didn't, you know, go wrong. And anybody who's with us today made it through childhood just fine. So the fifth is where we seek to take risks. That's fifth house concept and activity. You have Capricorn on the fifth, which is probably the most risk averse of all of the energies. It's associated with the past. It's associated with tradition. It's associated with having the approval of parents and a family. It's associated with authority, with government authority. Saturn rules Capricorn, so it has that association with the authority structures. and authority figures. And generally, nobody much thinks that Capricorn itself is, you know, inherently a place where, you know, you go and have a good time. South Park parodied this brilliantly in the post office, no, the DMV episode, worth watching, where Butters, you know, goes to the DMV. He learns that the NSA is watching everyone all the time. He gets this idea from Cartman. And the closest thing to the government that he can find in his life is the DMV. So he goes to the DMV and he leads people in the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, they've got a picture of Obama on the wall. And everyone starts having fun at the DMV. And the people who work at the DMV simply cannot comprehend this. They're just beside themselves, not understanding how anyone could possibly have fun at the DMV. So that's a little like Capricorn. And I've known more than my share of Capricorns, and yes, you know, we can have a great time at the DMV. So this is the setup for a lot of you know, responsibility put on a child. Right, this is the kid carrying the groceries at 5 years old, and you know, having to you know, you're 8, and you have to make sure that you're home on time to let your little brother in to the house because your parents are, you know, have to go to, you know, still at work till 6 o'clock, and maybe you've got to make your kid brothers and sisters dinner, but you're way too young to do that. Somebody, really, you know, when you're 9, somebody should be making you dinner. I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's enough that you have to, you know, show up and, you know, made it through the day. So this is Capricorn 5. And one of the things that has happened over the past 15, 16 years is that Pluto has come through here. And Pluto has led a kind of a demolition of everything that is characterized by Capricorn. And so we have seen a complete demolition of the family structure. We've seen a complete rearrangement of the entire concept of marriage. And we take for granted that that it's somehow you know, normal or acceptable that same-sex couples marry. Just 20 years ago, 30 years ago, this would have been considered, to many people, perfectly outrageous. It's still considered perfectly outrageous today. But under the influence of Pluto and Capricorn, pretty much everyone has to accept that this is how things are, whether they like it or not. And we could come up with many examples of how this has worked. I mean, Pluto in Capricorn begins with the mortgage crisis, where these shitty mortgages that were, you know, people were able to buy like McMansions with 500 FICO scores and, you know, was worthless. Excuse me. These mortgages were completely worthless and then securitized into kind of securities, bonds of a certain kind that companies, major companies, had half or more of their portfolio in these residential mortgage-backed securities. I mean, this is the very, you know, there's no better way to describe Pluto and Capricorn than these residential mortgage-backed securities, which basically took down a major piece of the economy in between 2007 and 2010, and everything had to be recapitalized and reorganized, and that's what we began Pluto and Capricorn with. For you personally, you were probably over this time determined to have more fun, determined to hang loose a little bit. I certainly hope so. All right. I think we'll come back to that, but I want to keep going here and just get this overview. I'm working from notes. Let's talk about one more place where there is inner child stuff. And I would say that this is Aries in the eighth house. Now, if you've been listening to my Virgo readings for a while, you know that I kind of can't shut up about what it means to have Aries in the eighth house. You know, Aries as well is impetuous and childlike, and it's the first sign. It's therefore associated with initiative and a kind of quest for freedom. But you have this placed in a corner of your chart where it will tend to be fully invested in others. Aries contains the quality of I am. It is the concept of self, and I think of self-actualization. There's a lot of concepts that are missing from the astrology books, you know, that are, you know, in like starting in like the, well, it goes back sooner, back earlier, Rudyard and others, but then you know, the Center for Psychological Astrology starts giving us all this psychoanalytic bullshit about what the chart means, and a lot of very basic ideas were left out. Like I've never read about, I guess if I could dig back through Dane Rudyard, who some people remember, we might find some notion of self-actualization, but it's not really in the subsequent psychological astrology books that I have seen, but it's very important to have room for that. Now, you could say the entire chart is about self-actualization, but it has to have a headquarters. It has to have a home. And I propose that headquarters is where we find Aries in the chart as the place where we do the most concentrated, focused becoming ourselves, and where there is a kind of a tropism toward that need, a tropism toward that desire. And what we see here is that the eighth is always invested in others. The eighth is where we merge into the life of another family, a partner, meaning that there's a financial, it is always the combination of a financial and sexual merger, right? That's how you know you're in the eighth, among other things. Or there's death involved. You know, when you're sitting in the safe deposit box room in the bank with your grandma, you know you're in the eighth house, and all the family secrets are kept there, and the eighth is the house of all the things that you can't talk about at the holiday dinner table, it's all generally very very hush hush. And so there's really two ways to take this, but the first way, and I think we can't really get far away from that, is the sense that there is this merger with other. The feminists used to talk about civil death, during wave zero and wave one. Civil death was, Jane Doe becomes Mrs. John Smith and ceases to exist. You'd be surprised how many women that positively love this. It's great. They get to disappear themselves from all of their, all their childhood friends. Jane Doe is Gonski, and the only way to get to her is by some form of networking, or, you sit down with a clairvoyant. And, you know, you find out that she's in St. Louis or something like this. The other part about the 8th, speaking of clairvoyance in St. Louis, clairvoyance telling you to go to St. Louis, is that there is this spooky quality to the 8th house. It's the house of the affairs of the dead. It's the house of one of the main places we find information about legacy. It's one of the places where we can look, you know, if you're studying astrology and you want to find out about, for example, the nature and cause of death, you look to the 8th house. If you want to find out about, the in-laws, but the purpose of finding out how much money the in-laws have is you figure out how much you're going to inherit, you look to the 8th house. But generally, it has this spooky, not mystical. There's a difference. The 8th is it's a little more, when it manifests in popular culture, it's a little more lowbrow. You know, the New Age has a good, you know, good image, I think, generally. But it too can veer toward spooky. But the 8th is really about ghosts and, let's see what else. I'm not coming up with a lot of good examples here. But generally, kind of necromancy, communicating with spirits. And it's kind of funny how this is all involved with all the themes of the 8th, sex, death, power over people, jealousy, the sex you want the very most, family secrets, submissive tendencies. And it is, I think, rather strange to have this as a place where you seek your, and remember, this is astrology, right? This is me halfway in my role of a fiction writer. This may not be true for you, but nobody's complained yet that I've been talking about this for like 15 years. And what I'm getting at here is that it is quite possible to get fucking lost in this place. Where there's a lot of corridors. It's like those scenes out of Twin Peaks where it's, Cooper is, walking through all those curtain rooms one after the next, and he exits one and then he comes out someplace where he previously was, but it was, too far away to have just opened one door. There's a violation of the laws of space and time, and it's a kind of a maze. And so this can be confusing. And one of the ways that it is possible to at least temporarily try to ease the confusion is through relationships. God, it's amazing how fast he gets cool when the weather is this cold. I have these two rather large kind of, I don't know quite how to describe the shape, like pint-sized teacups. And I've only been, 25 minutes. Okay, that's good. I got down here about half an hour ago. The way to ease the confusion, it would seem, is to marry someone. The problem with that is that when you marry someone, you are full on in the 8th house and you effectively merge with them. You become one with them, and therefore you open up to everything that is about them and their relatives and all their karma and all of their stuff. And here is where we find some of the greatest changes about to happen in your life, at least if solar astrology has anything to say about it. We live in the digital age. This is not quite like living in the space age or the jet age, because the space age and the jet age did not totally swallow everything and everyone. The jet age somewhat swallowed trains, but cars had a lot to do with that. Space age, well, you know, unless you're going to, you know, give Elon Musk $10 million that he doesn't need to go for a ride up on, you know, SpaceX rocket ship, don't really matter that much. But the digital age is all-consuming. And I remain concerned that very few people seem to be concerned about this. That like a lot of evolutions in the media environment, we're going along for the ride, but without recognizing the depth of the situation. And by that, I mean the way and the extent to which it has changed us. It has made us into different people. And that thing of being different people, well, it has a kind of a 12th house feeling that we don't really notice it. It's like a dream that we, you know, occasionally remember and then forget that it happened and forget the implications. And, you know, as Laurie Anderson once quipped, if only I could remember these dreams, I know they're trying to tell me something. Well, the digital dream is trying to tell us something. And what it's trying to tell us is that we are not the people that we once were. We like and need to think of ourselves, perhaps, as being the people that we once were, but it's not so. I have a kind of an archive facility, and I have a lot of my old papers there. And when it's nice out, I go there and, you know, pull out a file and read through, you know, what I was thinking about 30 years ago. Now, maybe everyone feels this way, that they cannot, well, I think maybe people feel they can't relate to the person they were in the past, or they're glad that they're not that person anymore. The feeling that I have is that that person is still in me, but is not easy to find, and the thing that is between me and it is the digital experience of total transformation. And look, I jumped in almost as eagerly as everybody else because that was the thing to do. And initially, to me, a computer was a thing that simply made it easier to write. You could correct the thing on screen and then print it, et cetera, et cetera. Move the paragraphs around. You can't do that with a typewriter. So the digital divide, I think, especially for, you know, grown-ups, young people have a different experience, especially, you know, digital natives. And now they're, you know, all over the place, right? They you know, driving cars and things like this. To me, there are certain scenes, like locations in the astrology, where this has happened as primary zones. And the first one is Aries. And this has been the kind of work of Eris in Aries, which is in just a century, taken us into mass electronic communication and then through fully participatory, all-consuming digital existence, not just communication. Existence. And this has led to a transhumanist condition where we see all kinds of bizarre concepts and behaviors, including body modification, radical, irreversible body modification of children, accepted as somehow normal. And say what you want about adults choosing to, you know, amputate parts of their body. But children? And the adults say, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. All kinds of things. I could you know, go on and on. But, you know, these include genetic modifications. The flu shot was reintroduced as a genetic modification in late 2020, called mRNA, which you know, we were told was not, would not, you know, affect the genes and chromosomes, but of course it does. Okay, so this has created not only a state of total instability, but also amnesia. And two things are about to happen here, and I'll talk about Aquarius and Gemini, which I think are two other important locations of this. But as for Aries, which is where you tend to relate to the world in your way that facilitates your merger with the other, this has become a thing under the influence of the digital environment. I get nervous when I try to think of what we do, what you know, what's left that is not directly influenced, impacted, co-created, controlled by, filtered through, charges processed by, transactions moderated by, observed by, total surveillance, the digital environment. What is left? Can you think of anything? And I can tell you from studying media with some intensity, and commitment, there's never been anything like this. But this, there's about to be a change in this environment. And the environment is the total environment, but the environment is also our experience of who we are. And remember that this experience of who we are for you is thrust into this mystical world of the other, and of, you know, all this legacy material, right? Sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, surrender, and the affairs of the dead and all this stuff, and the in-laws hanging out, you know, with you, or the feeling of the in-laws hanging out with you. So for all of us alive, Eris has been here for our whole lives. I mean, that, you know, the 105-year-old guy in France, you know, who he probably was born with Eris in Pisces, but everybody else has Eris in Aries. And so this is now a, you know, we are now all, we're some combination of electric, analog people or totally digital people. Chiron has been, I think, doing its best to run a kind of a cleanup operation, or at least a consciousness raising operation, since 2018. But as we have seen, this has been somewhat disastrous. You know, Aries is the location of a number of different revolutions, whether we're talking about feminism of the 1850s, Marxism of the 1850s, a whole diversity of revolutions and all of that stuff. And so there is a there is an aggressive quality that can manifest in Aries. And Chiron has been calling attention to that aggressive quality. And now it's about to make the conjunction to Eris for the first time since 1971-72. And my sense is that this is going to shock you into full awareness of something. This is the awakening aspect, and it is likely to awaken you. And, you know, I was, how old was I, 7, 8 when this last happened. So I don't really remember it so good. I know my parents were miserable and, you know, about to get divorced and, you know, all that. I can't really associate that with the Chiron-Eris conjunction. But that said, I think my mother's Virgo rising. That's when she woke up to the fact that she didn't want to be married and gave herself permission to act on that. Now, I'm not suggesting this is going to happen to you, but what I am suggesting is that under this influence, you will figure out what you need to figure out, or you will accept what you have already figured out, but have not, you know, completely made peace with. And so you probably already know what this is about. And so I suggest you get ahead of this a little bit. This has been warming up for a year or so. The first kind of awakening knell was the eclipse of April 2024, where I think that's kind of like everything you need to know you knew in April of 2024. There was no turning back on knowledge by April 2024. So, you know, then comes the possibility of taking action. Now, fortunately, what happens in parallel to that is that two major planetary influences enter Aries. And, you know, any slow-moving planet entering Aries is a big deal. It is indicative of a major cycle renewing. Saturn was last here, 29 years ago. Neptune, my laptop is closed. Let's see. Was Neptune was discovered in Aries? Let's see. Hold on. Let's find this position. Doesn't really affect us so much, but it's always, I think, good to have. All right. Neptune entered Aries, and the Civil War happened in the United States, 1861-62. So the first big news of Neptune in Aries was the Civil War. Coincidentally, Uranus in Gemini, that's about to happen at the same time too. There are a lot of people warmongering Civil War. I don't know if you're noticing this, but all of this constant pushing of conflict between these inherent like groups that should not even be considered groups, like men and women should be considered people. What color your skin is. The wars are endless. And if you listen carefully, there is the constant push for violence. So then Saturn enters at the same time, and the two are going to dance around what's called the Aries point for a year, and then finally form a conjunction in 2026. One time only conjunction, but it's prolonged by the fact that they are working up to the conjunction for a year. And as far as I'm reading it, what this is about is you being much more constructive than rebellious, right? Chiron Eris can have a rebellious quality. It can also teach lessons of rebellion, but there's a bit of upheaval with Chiron Eris. With Saturn Neptune, there are all the materials that you need to form yourself, to have enough substance to form yourself as you become who you're going to be in this next stage of your existence. And remember that this forming for you almost always happens in the context of relationship. Now, this is taken for granted so much that it almost feels strange to talk about it. But the kinds of relationships we are conditioned to have, I would say exclusively, with the rarest of exceptions, are the kinds of relationships where the conditioning is to surrender individuality, i.e., the experience of being your distinct self, not experienced through the filter of another person, not in any way living vicariously through another person. And this, there's not a TV show that doesn't in some way extol the virtues of this. And, all the drama that we see on television and movies is in some way associated with this. Everything's the eighth house. Wherever you go, all the big dramas are, and the ones they sell us the most are eighth house dramas. But here, the 1-2 is the rebellion, the sense of awakening, which you've been getting now for quite a while, plus the constructive piece. Now, I would caution against, even approving of violent or aggressive thoughts at all. And the only reason why I say this is I keep reading things that are forgiving of extremely violent impulses. I mean, I just saw a piece in The Atlantic the other day where a woman was saying that her father was abusive, and therefore now she wants to kill all men. As if the idea even has some, therapeutic value. It would certainly help. It would have therapeutic value if it came out in the therapy room and we could translate that into angry at father, as opposed to it being somehow legitimate to want to kill all men and therefore have nothing to do with them. So this is going around, and the source of this aggression, I think, is Aries, Mars ruled. And the crime scene of the disembodiment of electrical and digital media. So you might say that with between Chiron Eris and Saturn Neptune, one is bringing the awareness of the disembodiment problem, and the other is bringing substantial material to address the disembodiment problem, which ends up really being about the mind more than about the body. Disembodiment means the mind existing as its own seemingly free-floating avatar, in virtual space, as opposed to a thing on Earth that you know that lives on the ground. Also, I haven't talked much about this, but one of my favorite minor planets is entering Aries as well. And this is called Borsisi. Borsisi, late 90s creation, about a 300-year orbit. Let me see here. So it's a slow mover. It's not exactly 300 years. Mm-hmm. 287 and a half years. So it's slower than Pluto. But it's amazing how fast these things move, even though they're slower than Pluto. Borsisi is about it. Borsisi works the line between truth and lies. And it works, it addresses the concept that certain lies are beneficial, that we have to lie to ourselves in order to be able to survive. We can't, tell the truth to ourselves about everything. And I would be cautious of this and recognize that this influence is in the conversation. To make a conscious study of the distinction between truth and lies, remembering that in Aries, the truth and lies are about who you are, and they're about who you are in the context of your relationships. I wish relationships were more flexible. Part of what makes me nervous in life and as an astrologer is that there seem to be very few changes that we can make in relationships that don't destroy the relationship and therefore the whole context that the relationship has established. And this is not easy. This is troubling. And I think that, you're maybe hearing the nervousness in my voice on this topic where, the fact that all this is happening in this place where you tend to invest yourself in others means that there has to be a change there, but the only change that's possible is the complete disillusion of the relationship. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it is a commonplace state of affairs for people, and part of why it's a commonplace state of affairs involves control drama. It involves jealousy. It involves the refusal to change, and also, and this is pretty serious, the refusal to admit that one is not the person they presented themselves as when entering the relationship, or they have become a different person through inherent growth process and, the inevitable, whether conscious and desired or not, self-actualization. And so this is a time to develop communication with your partners, and also I always say partners because I do not assume monogamy. Most people try to be monogamous or say they're monogamous. Speaking as your friendly neighborhood astrologer, I realize how rare that is and the deceptions involved in the claims of monogamy. Not always, but often, and so therefore, I'm inclusive of the possibility of multiple partners. But in any event, communication is essential. And by the way, people who are polyamorous have to make communication the primary thing. It's to the point of the obsession over communication and relationships it gets to be extremely tiresome. In at least through my experience in the poly world from around 1997 till 2007. It seems like all they want to talk about is relationships. It's not very creative. Nonetheless, that's a necessity of life for people who are doing conscious, open, responsible non-monogamy. They have to communicate. Whereas monogamous people or people who are claiming to be monogamous do not have to do this. There's plenty that can be just kind of swept off to the side because only when it really, when suddenly, oops, you have to cop to something. Is it necessary to have the conversation? And this often involves certain breaks of faith. And I think that we would be happier if we admitted that. Just because we're invested in a monogamous, let's pretend that the people are actually being monogamous. They're not having sex with anyone else. It does not preclude attraction and attachment to other people. There is a big drama about this, and it's good to really be real about where you stand on this. And I would not want to be in any relationship where I didn't know the full spectrum of my partner's mind and their experiences and their desires and their truth, and where they were not fully aware and wholly comfortable with the experiences that I've had and the things that I want and that have whatever. This is not we're one step shy of going out and exploring these things, and just at the point of a conversation, right? Okay, let's this is supposed to be a career reading. Let's go there. If we count Sedna, which ain't chopped liver, two major planetary transits influence your work life. And work is important to you for a number of psychological reasons, one of them being that it is where you find acceptance. Your involvement in the workplace is where you most easily find your spirit of camaraderie with people and your spirit of cooperation and of celebrating and experiencing and exploring a shared sense of mission. Pluto has been teasing its way into Aquarius now. Basically, this spanned March 2023 out to November 2024, about a year and a half that went very quickly. What doesn't go quickly now? And now, for the foreseeable future, out to 2043-44, Pluto is going to be in Aquarius, which is place six for Virgo. The solar chart being the chart for the sign concept, not the chart for the person. But it's the chart for the person. For example, when Virgo is rising, it's much closer to home. But nonetheless, it works the same, and this is to me speaking about an intensification of this environment, and I think a rising consciousness of what everything being digital has done to the workplace. I used to buy my insurance from a guy named Billy Ligon. who had this this office in Rosendale, New York, and you'd walk into this room, and you know, it was a storefront, but it was one big room, and you were looking at maybe 50 file cabinets, and maybe 10 file clerks. This was till fairly recently, and Billy was surrounded by all of these women who were his file clerks of all ages. I'm sure some of them had worked for him for 25 years. And Billy's sitting back there in the corner, looking a little bit like Jerry Garcia, sitting off to the side. And this was a workplace where there was human connection. That's why I loved it so much. I didn't want to get my insurance other places. I would only go there because I just thought it was so cool that they that this is what it was. Like, this was the thing behind the operation, and it was extremely efficient, and everybody knew what they were doing, and it seemed to me to be a happy place. Now this is all done with computers, and so the human element of the employment environment is very rapidly being subtracted, and the human element of consciousness is being powdered and vacuumed up by the consciousness that is digital consciousness. So there's some radical change, and this may represent a change in career for you. It may represent a change in what you want to do every day. Because the sixth is the quotidian daily activity. So this is probably slow acting, but the Pluto in Capricorn wasn't that slow acting. It was firing up with, Pluto conjunct the galactic center a couple of degrees before Capricorn. But now we're full on in Pluto in Aquarius. And the caution there is to not let your life be run by people making your decisions. And I will repeat my health warning for Virgos. Of all the signs, it is essential that Virgo not make its health decisions by committee. We saw this going on in 2020, 2021. Where pretty much everybody was expected to make their health decisions by committee. Oh, all those people think you should do that. All those people think that you've got this disease. Oh, you might have this disease. Oh, all these people think you should take this injection. And the sixth is also the house of wellness and medical issues. And so it is extraordinarily, I will use a strong word, dangerous for you to follow any form of a health trend, no matter what the kind of trend, whether it's only eat meat or only eat vegetables or, you get a tour of this watching YouTube commercials, everyone telling you what's going to make you live forever. All of these trends are toxic to you. You must assert yourself and make your own decisions. And I would remind you that as a kind of hobby homeopath, it is essential, I think, to take a minimalist view of diagnosis and of treatment. That we tend to radically over-treat and over-diagnose. And this does a lot of damage. I believe, and I'm not, that's just not a belief, this is an observation, that most of the sickness that we have in the world is a result of vaccination, drugs, and the complete disconnect for how to handle any form of a chronic condition. There's no understanding in medicine for how to do this. All right, back to, so you got to have your own understanding. All right, one last point. In the middle of the year, Uranus makes its way over your 10th house cusp, Gemini. This represents a radical expansion of your potential and your sense of your potential. And this is a good thing because you tend to have a somewhat myopic view of yourself. And that myopic view is made the more complicated by this very slow-moving point in Virgo called Trans-Pluto. It's a calculated point. It's one of those hypothetical planets. And I've been studying it now for maybe 15 years. And to me, it represents narrowness, self-criticism, and very high specificity. And I'm using the word myopia, which is, short-sightedness, and maybe a bit of tunnel vision. Uranus in Gemini is going to shake this up. Now, you have plenty on your plate with the changes of how you think of yourself in relationships. And I what I didn't say about the eighth house, and also, you know, you've had a lot of seventh house transits that are just wrapping up. Saturn and Neptune have been through your seventh. And I think there's going to be a sense of the fog clearing as they enter Aries. The most important thing is your idea of what a relationship is. Relationships are important, but they're almost always based on a kind of a template of what you think a relationship is or a relationship should be. And that causes all kinds of misery from, expectations that are not grounded in reality. I will conclude by saying that you possess plenty of gravitas, meaning like substance and depth, to handle these changes. But the radical shift is a reorientation on true self-awareness and making all of your decisions based upon true self-awareness rather than doing that thing that you can do sometimes. I'll say, oh, I know this about myself, but whatevs. Let's just see what happens. It seems like a good opportunity. Cannot be place. Honor. The creature, the completely distinct and unique, loving being that you are. All right, that is what I've got for you for this annual edition of Planet Waves. Thank you for trusting me with such sensitive matters and for your continued business with your friendly neighborhood astrologer. And I'll see you somewhere else around the wheel. Lots of love. And bye for now.